Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Good morning. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600. And it is a chilly February 5th outside. After the not-so-snowmageddon that I get a kick out of, everybody, oh my God, there's going to be 17 inches. There's going to be 20 inches. Oh, it's going to be the worst snowstorm ever. What'd you get? 7-8 inches, something like that? Yeah, yeah. And so everybody's out there, you know. Now, I want to say, I suppose that it's like predicting football games or like predicting stocks and bonds and stuff like that. Yes, things can change. But, you know, with all these models they got, I read something that was interesting that said that with all these models and everything that we've got now, the computer models from GFS and the European model, which must be better than ours because it's European, and all this kind of crap. Okay, so what happens is that they said Sonny Elliott. Everybody remember Sonny Elliott? Sonny Elliott was more accurate with a chalkboard and a plaster mold of Michigan 50 years ago than these current ones are. And I got to say, it's interesting because maybe there's just too much information out there. I mean, all the schools were canceled ahead of time and all the businesses were closed and the stores were closed in the grocery store and everything like that. Oh, man, it's the shelves were empty. Who we got? We've got Ed from Ypsilanti on the weather. Hi, Ed.
They said there would be snow.
I know. Isn't that funny?
You know, it's like, come on. I mean, I had to go into work after all. But what really bothers me is the kid across the street comes and borrows my garden tractor and does everybody's driveways. He robbed me of the... I know how much you like it. Can you imagine if somebody did your driveway for you with your tractor?
Oh, yeah, I know. I like doing it. I actually got out and did the whole court. I live on a cul-de-sac that's about a quarter mile long, and I do the whole court because it took, 3 days again for the county to come down. So...
Yeah, I like doing everybody's driveways, and he stole it from me. But like my brother said, he told me this. He says, you know, when the weather people get it wrong, they say, we dodged a bullet, instead of saying, we were wrong.
I know. It's so funny. I do have to say I have a severe case of snowblower envy from a neighbor, okay? And, you know, you guys know what I'm talking. It's like going to the range and having gun envy. Okay,
snowblower. Never shoot a gun you can't afford.
I know. And actually, you know who's guilty of that too is like Theron when he
to mind.
Yeah, he picks up. You'll go somewhere and somebody will go, oh, we want to shoot this, and then he'll go, oh, I've got to have one of those. It's like that PS90 that he's got and stuff like that.
No, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, I know. But they're cool guns. But what happened is my neighbor picked up an old, and actually my father had one of these that we gave to a guy down in Indiana this past year after he passed away. But it was a 1993 Ford LGT diesel. Which is a, you know, a three-cylinder Japanese diesel lawn tractor, garden tractor. And my dad's had like 5,000 hours on it. It was a mess. And the mower deck and everything was bad. My neighbor found one for like $3,000 with only 500 hours on it. It was brand new, okay? And it had a new deck, a new plow blade, and a never-used snowblower. I'm watching him. He's out there going up and down his driveway with that snowblower. I'm going, oh, I am so jealous. I wonder if he'll let me borrow that. Because I normally do. He does his driveway, although I do it for him sometimes. But now that he's got a snowblower, I'm not going to bother doing it for him. But
I know we're on tractor talk right now, but, you know, years ago, we had a big blizzard, and I took my kids out, and I'm dragging them down the street up and down on a sled. I let my kid drive, and for whatever reason, the engine blew up. Not his fault. So now we've got all this snow and more snow coming, and I can't plow. And so I come home from work the next day, and somebody in a black hoodie is doing my driveway, and they've done everybody's driveway with a huge, you know, dual stage, big snow blower.
Yep.
This guy across the street, he knew I couldn't do it anymore for the, you know, for the moment. So he went out and bought one. Then he says, hey, I don't have a garage. I don't have a shed. Can I leave this in your garage? And it stayed there for like 5 years. He sold the house, moved away. I gave it to my boy.
Oh, man. Well, possession is 9/10 of the law,
yeah,
huh? You
yeah.
know, so what the heck?
Yep.
Well, that is really cool. And well, I guess we ought to talk about guns. This is called Trigger Talk, isn't it?
Yes.
So, by the way, while I've got Ed on, I want to tell you something. I got a text from Ed last week at like 8:45 in the morning or something like that, which is okay. I'm up and about, but
you're retired.
Yeah, I'm retired. So, at any rate, I got to say, I was in a bathrobe with a cup of coffee, but what the heck?
TMI. Okay.
Yeah. So at any rate, Ed calls and or texts me and says, can you give me a call? And I thought, uh-oh, what's going on? Something happened. So, no. Ed had an idea, and he said, have I ever thought about putting, you know, I've got the Trigger Talk podcasts up on my website, which is TriggerTalkRadio.com. And every week, literally hundreds or thousands of you pull down these the podcasts that I put up. But he said, have you ever thought of putting it on Anchor? Which is anchor.fm. And he said that links to Spotify and some others and stuff. And I said, no, I hadn't thought of that, but I'll give it a try. So I did put them up, Ed. I've got, I just put two up under Trigger Talk Radio. I thought I'd start it and, you know, see how that would work, if anybody'd listen to them or anything like that. I've got to read more about it, but I did put up last week's show and the week before, and I'll do this week's too, and then I'll start adding in the older ones. But the thing is that it is pretty simple, and with all this controversy going on about Spotify now, I'm thinking, oh, gosh, that's just what I need to do, fuel the fire with a gun talk show, you know? So we'll see what happens, Ed.
Well, I'd like to tell your listeners that, for one, I'm sure that Stephanie's going to either add or change a pointer on your podcast link on the whamradio.com page, which says podcasts, to point to both, you know, Trigger Talk and the Anchor link that the other shows are on also, like my show and the other, you know, Dick's show, Rick's show, and Bruce's and Phil's. So regardless, the beauty of this is that now they can go to Google Podcasts, I think Spotify, but I use Google Podcasts because it's easy, it's very simple, and you can subscribe to Trigger Talk. And it ends up in your list of podcasts, so you don't have to actually, well, you may not like that idea. You may like people going right to your page.
Yeah, I don't care.
Sorry about that. Never mind, I
no,
didn't say anything.
I don't care. It'll be fun no matter what. So,
yeah.
Thanks.
Never miss an episode.
Yep, thanks for the pointer. I appreciate it. So,
all right, talk to you later.
Okay, Ed, thanks.
Bye.
Let's see, gun shows today. And I was actually thinking about going to this one either this afternoon or tomorrow for sure. The Lansing Mason Gun Show is up at the Ingham County Fairgrounds this weekend. St. Ignace Gun Show, that's a long way up, but it's at the Kewadin, I don't know how you say it, casino in St. Ignace. And then Ohio's got the Westland Mall Gun Show and the Tri-State Gun Show. Whole ton of them out in Missouri for you guys. The Callaway County Gun Show, the Cape's Original Gun Show in Cape Girardeau. I always think of Rush Limbaugh when I hear Cape Girardeau. The Verified Midwest St. Charles Arms Show at the St. Charles Convention Center. The Clinton Gun Show at Benson Convention Center in Clinton, Missouri. And the Red Shed Gun Show in Doolittle, Missouri. And there's three of them in New York for Mike out there on Long Island. We got the, the NEACA Newburg Gun Show, the Alexander Gun Show in Alexander, New York, and the Sydney Gun and Knife Show in Sydney, New York. I don't know where that is, but that's at the Elks Lodge there. So We did get new numbers for CPLs this week. We've got, let's see, we have got 771,519 CPLs in Michigan active as of February 1st. And that's up 4,288. But, you know, it's interesting because at the same time, we had about 1,000 expire. And we're still up by 4,200. So that's pretty good. So we actually came close to like 6,000 new ones, and there's 6,100 still in pending. So I want to say we're doing pretty well. We've got, let me see. Oh, I wanted to mention this coming up because I had a meeting on it this week. And we haven't been able to do it for the last couple of years. But this year, we are out at Tri-County Sportsman's League and probably the other places around the state that are doing it as well. I'll have to look and see so that I'm an equal opportunity kind of person. But Women on Target, which is an NRA event for women shooters, maybe kind of like an introduction to guns for women shooters, is going to be June 11th at Tri-County Sportsman's League this year. And it is so much fun. And it's we do all sorts of things where you shoot, gosh, you shoot archery, you shoot, we're going to do some targets where we're doing clay targets. I don't know if we're going to have trap because we're working on some issues with the trap range. But we're going to have rifles and we're going to have the basic pistol, which is what my group teaches, the 22 caliber pistols, and then there'll be large caliber pistols and large caliber, which includes this year, they're going to be shooting some pistol caliber carbines and stuff. So I volunteered my my Beretta CX4 Storm before a 40 cal because they've actually got a lot of ammo for 40 cal. And so we're going to make sure that we use some of that up instead of going out and buy an expensive 9 or 45, things like that. So at any rate, then we're going to have in July, and I'll talk more about it when it happens as we get closer, but a thing called Kids on the Range Day, which is an opportunity for youngsters to come and shoot. And that is just a fun hoot for somebody if they want their kids or grandkids or somebody to get some exposure. So Women on Target on June 11th, Saturday, all-day event, kind of fun. And then we'll talk about it more. I'll have some of the people in that are involved, and we'll have some of the people that are making donations to it and stuff over the next couple of months so that you can get a plan for it. This year, they're going to be doing it with an online registration and everything. You can still mail them in and stuff, but also they're going to do an online registration to make it easier for everybody. We are in the 21st century, after all. So I'll let you know when that gets a little closer. I want to say we had a listener last week send me an email because actually it was Ed from Ypsilanti and I were talking about some different book series. And it's interesting because the book series that we were talking about is kind of like an apocalyptic after the EMP, end of the world, you know, not really end of the world, but survivalist kind of stuff. And so listener Mike, and I hope you're listening out there, Mike, today. I sent you an email last night with a whole bunch of information, but I thought I'd go through that a little bit today because what's interesting about the books are they are a combination of interesting fiction, okay? They are a bit of preparedness, not just a bit of preparedness, but quite a bit, so that, to get you thinking about things. You know, there are places out there that sell things like Wise Food Storage and My Patriot Supply and stuff like that that sell all these, prepared dried food that's got 25 years shelf lives and stuff like that. And all of that's good, but you got to have a lot of things and you got to have a lot of that to plan for because it's really bad what would happen if we have even a natural EMP. So I'm going to go through some of those books. I am an avid reader. I have always been an avid reader since I was a child. And I remember my first grade teacher, Mrs. Salarin, she took a lot of extra interest in me and gave me books because she was my mother's first grade teacher, if you can believe that, too. And this was down in Indiana on the farm. I was living on the farm at the time. And she got me books on phonics and things like just fun stuff. And I really took an interest in reading. And even though I read for years, magazines and books and stuff, then what really kicked it in, and I looked up my list of books since the last 10 years. Yeah, 10 years. When I got started reading Kindles, okay? Now, I started out with a Kindle app on my phone, a smartphone, and I had it on the computer and stuff like that as well on my laptop, but it really kicked off especially easily when I got a Kindle reader, one of the Kindle Paperwhites, okay? They're very nice. They're $100, $169, something like that. And I got it mainly because, and I don't know if this affects many of you guys out there or ladies out there too, because I always like to read before I go to sleep. It helps me get relaxed, okay, and go to sleep. And so I had used like a itty bitty book light and a light mounted on the wall that just spotlights on the book and stuff. All of that was too bright for my wife. She was having a hard time falling asleep when I would read. And sometimes, you guys know about this, you would get into a book and you might be reading until 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning because it's just you can't put it down, right? And now I know that there are people out there that go, gosh, I don't read anything but newspapers or gun magazines, okay? Well, that may be true. But if you're a novel reader, the thing like a Kindle is an outstanding thing to use. Yeah, I would suggest you look into it. If you want to try it, just for example, the Kindle Reader is free, the app, and you can you can put it on your iPhone or put it on an Android phone and find out if you like it first. You can turn the light down real low so it's not real bright like a computer screen at night there. It is actually, like a dim glow, and you can still read it because the rest of the room is darkened. And so I was looking at my list, and actually now I also still read paper books and stuff, not as much anymore, but I went back and looked, and I have read 138 Kindle books in the past 10 years. So that's an average of 13.8 a year, right? Or one a month, a little over one every 3 weeks or something like that. And so I've got a ton of them that I've read. And I'm going to mention, I don't read just apocalyptic kind of stuff. I also read, fun fiction, some escapist stuff like Clive Cussler. I'm a junkie for Clive Cussler books. I've read every one of his books. And then I read some real, you know, biographical books of, God, how do you say that, Derek? Is it
biographical?
Biographical. Gosh darn it. It's like it was my mouth. Thank you, Derek. He is really something, isn't he? My mind was blanking on that. But I read like Jimmy Stewart, Bomber Pilot, some of the O'Reilly books on different things like killing Patton, killing Hitler, killing the what was it? It's just like it's not really killing, but what it is it's about the demise of these things. So at any rate, we've got a call. We have got, we did have a call. Derek, who do we have?
It's Jenny from Brownstown.
Jenny from Brownstown. Hi, Jenny.
Hey, Dick. How you doing?
Doing fine. What's up?
I'm not talking about guns because I can't own one because I'm blind, but I'll talk about reading for a minute.
Okay.
I don't have a Kindle, but I read with my Library for the Blind player, and I download books from this one couple different websites, and I use a card reader and put the SD card in it and put that in my player. But I know how it is to to start a book at night because I read to relax too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know how it is. I mean, I've been up all night once in a while reading.
Oh, I know. It's like you keep looking at the clock and you go, gosh, it's 3 o'clock. I really should go to bed. I got to get up for work in the morning or something. And then it's 4 o'clock and then you go, oh, well, should I just stay up? What the heck, right?
I know. I mean, it's awful, but I've done it too. So I'm right there with you.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, I'm going to mention some of these books. I got a whole sheet here on them. I don't know if you like these kind, but I'll read them. Actually, let me tell you here first.
Okay.
One series is kind of like a preparedness one on an EMP event, okay, an electromagnetic pulse event.
Is that the William Forston book?
Yes, 1 Second After series.
Okay, I haven't read those yet, but I'm gonna.
Oh, you got to read them. There's three in the series, so that's great. Okay, well, thank you for the call today, Jenny. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dick. Okay,
bye-bye. So I just mentioned 1 Second After series by William Forston. That's 1 Second After, then 1 Year After, and then The Final Day. And it's outstanding, okay? It is like a preparedness novel, but it also gets into the personal aspect of it, the amount of loss of life and stuff that if society lost its electricity, you'd have no phone. It'd be like Gilligan's Island, no phones, no lights, no motor cars, right? No, but that's true. But it still would be that all the people that only have 2 or 3 days of food, that do not have ways to get water, all this, the loss. There are, you know, estimates out there in these books that talk about 90% of the population being gone in a year. So, and 50% after the first 3 months. So, okay, another one. This is not a series, but it's an individual book called Lights Out. It's outstanding. That by David Crawford. Then there's a book series called The Survivalist Series. The first one was called Going Home, and it's by a author named A. American, which I believe stands for Angry American. But he's got the Going Home series. It is 10 books, Going Home, Surviving Home, Escaping Home. Goes on. It's an outstanding series that follows the people through this ordeal, okay? A. American also did one called Cry Havoc, okay, which is actually based more on an economic collapse. It's pretty interesting. Cry Havoc, Cry, CRYHAVOC by A. American. I also enjoyed a short series. I wish he'd come out with some more, called Agenda 21 by Glenn Beck. He and a ghostwriter wrote together these two Agenda 21 books that are very interesting. So I think you would find those interesting. This is in the order I've been reading, or order I rank them, at least. Then there's one called the EMP Survivor Series by an author named Chris Pike. And I had her on the show 3 or 4 times, every time she'd come out with a new book. And she's got some new series going now, but this is a 5-book series called the Unexpected World series. And then the number 2 is the Uncertain World, then Unknown World, Unwanted World, and Undefeated World. Outstanding book series. Again, same characters following through it and their trials and tribulations. It's pretty interesting. I just finished, or almost finished. I got a little bit left. I didn't get to finish it last night because I started a new series last night, and I won't tell you about that one yet, but when I get done with it, I'll let you know. The Kelly Turnbull series by Kurt Schlichter. Ed Bondarenka and I were talking about that one. That one starts with called The People's Republic and is a 6-book series, and it's very interesting about... I want to say politically correctness and the blue states versus the red states. And, oh, you won't believe it. Once you start it with People's Republic, it's so funny and actually scary, you won't be able to put it down. So when we get back, we'll talk about a few more series that I've got that are very, very good, and I enjoyed them quite a bit. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. We'll be right back.
Wham! Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And, oh, yes, I know, this isn't library talk or book talk or something like that, but we did have fun talking about that, and I'm just looking through some of these other ones that I've read. I went back and read a book that I haven't read for 50 years, probably. It was called The First and the Last by Adolf Galland, who was the top German ace of World War II, surviving ace. I think Eric Hartmann was actually the top ace. But one called A Higher Call, where it was about a B-17 actually the pilot named Charlie Brown, and he was on his first mission, and as he came, very touching story, because this ME-109 pilot, I think his name was Steiner, he actually kind of guided the guy back to the coast and pointed him off towards England and saluted him when he left. I mean, chivalry in war is not gone. I mean, it is now, maybe with fighting Taliban and stuff like that, but it wasn't before. So a lot of interesting books. And like I said, I read a lot of the Clive Cussler books too, which my wife says are written at like a third grade level. Maybe that's why I like it. I don't know. But the point is that a lot of interesting books, Killing the SS by Bill O'Reilly, different things like that. And so this one that I was talking about, and by the way, I enjoyed one too. It was called, where is it? I wrote it down. Well, anyway, it was called By Force of Patriots by Cameron Reddy. And he actually wrote two books. And I want to say that he was a listener to the radio station and stuff. I met him at a gun or a remote we did out at Ann Arbor Arms. We've got Theron on line two. Hi, Theron. How are you?
Yo, Daddy-O. Great subject and topic today.
Mm. I'm glad you like it, because I know you share some of these same interests that I have.
Well, the thing about these books and the 1 second after, 1 year after, and that was one of my all-time favorites. Also, Lights Out, and then there's The Patriots by Rawls. Is his last name? I can't remember his first name.
Actually, I was just going to get to that. Wait a second. That is James Wesley Rawls.
Who is it?
James Wesley Rawls.
Right. I thought of him as Jim Rawls. Now, yeah. The thing about him that differentiates him from the others, this guy's a stone cold, meticulous survivalist. I mean, he's noted for this even before he got into his book. So it's almost excruciating to read through a chapter of how the SEER works on an AR-10.
I know.
He never stops, but he really captures the essence of, if you're going to do it, you need to do it like the Patriots did in that compound they had. There's no other way.
Right. I was just going to, that's the last ones I've got here. There's five books called Patriots, Surviving the Coming Collapse, and then Survivor, A Novel of the Coming Collapse, Founders, Expatriates, and Liberators, all outstanding books.
Now, what all these have in common, they are speculation and fiction, and that's good. These guys are well thought out. But I just recently published on Facebook on my page an actual eyewitness, hands-on, lived-it account of the collapse of Yugoslavia '94 through '96. The man was there, so that he was hands-on, exactly what it would be like, and it's riveting. It's beyond belief.
I'll
he
have
survived.
To look
it.
At,
he said the only reason
he's,
and this is of course when the Soviets left, they were the only order there. Once it left, all the fragmentary people got back together and started killing each other. They've been doing it for 1,000 years. Old animosities around the Muslim takeover, the Ottoman Empire. Anyway, this man said, nobody will make it on their own. Nobody survived by themselves. The thing that I found fascinating, he said there were no windows and no doors on anything. And he said the reason there were no doors, everybody had to burn the doors for firewood and or to cook with.
Yeah.
So really quick, there's nothing but just standing shelter with nothing like to block any wind or elements. And he said that happens almost overnight. He said marauding gangs, He said there's two viable ways to survive. You either have to have some type of a family unit, which he had. He had, I think, 12 or 15 people in his family, and he said that's the only reason he made it. And some of his family were killed or died. And the other way is, he said, it's just as legitimate, be a marauder. You're going to wind up in somewhere of a maybe a 10, 15, 20-member gang that goes around and takes stuff. He said, there's no other way.
Either people going to take stuff or you're going to have to protect your stuff, right?
Well, that's right. And he said, you never want to look like you have stuff, ever. He said, the guys that looked like they were high-end suits and ties, they were the first ones gone. You know, you got to look like a homeless bum. You want to make sure none of your stuff is ever found. But one of the things I found fascinating was, they grew food, he said, but they were constantly having to defend it so it wasn't taken. And the marauders had to have a whole bunch of, that's what he called the marauders, just roving gangs. That's what humanity always devolves back to at some point. I mean, that was basically the Indian tribes. But the thing that he pointed out was, and to this day he said, he has 4,000 rounds of ammunition for every firearm he has.
Yep.
And antibiotics. He said, you must have antibiotics. You must have firearms and ammunition. And the thing that really was stood out on that was, this is a guy that actually went through it. He said it was random. We heard reports of that. Sarajevo, which was a cultural jewel for the longest time, just devolved into people be on the street and a sniper for the hell of it would be on a roof across the road picking them off. I mean, just no rhyme or reason to anything. Death and destruction everywhere. And women, total commodities used for rape and trade and barter. He said it was just insane.
Yeah, I think that I know that, like my wife has said, when I was talking about some of the preparation kind of things and stuff, she goes, I just want to go out in the first wave, okay?
Oh, yeah, well, women don't go out in the first wave. They're traded.
Yeah, and the other thing is that...
The thing that he really made clear was he was there. He did it. I mean, so all the stuff that are in the books there really make a lot of sense. But that's, in a lot of ways, the ideal situation. That's where One Second After really tells a tale about, you know, marauding cannibalistic bike gangs. You know, we kid around about that. But
no, it's true. And it, actually, you talked about a long time ago a movie that you enjoyed called The Road.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Same kind of thing. So
that's kind of the picture he paints, especially if you're by yourself. And I posted it on Facebook. I post prolifically, so it's down 100 posts. But it was very, very... cogent and compelling to read this man's hands-on story. He went through the whole thing. He said, it's only by grace of God he's alive.
Yeah.
Lives in the country now. I think because everything went into Croatia hates Montenegro, Montenegro hates Macedonia, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, remember Milosevic, right? He was the guy they busted for being the war criminal, for going out and doing the ethnic cleansing.
Yep.
He was doing what came natural for that, I'm not, you know, excusing what he did. But he was literally getting rid of a lot of the people that were preying on his people.
Yeah. It'll devolve. It will devolve.
That's the reality of it. And if somebody emails me at x@whamradio.com, I will find that piece and send it to him. It's a very interesting read by a guy who was right there. He lived One Second After.
Yeah.
And he said it happens fast.
Yeah.
It happens almost like it just devolves in an instant. And
yeah.
Like you pointed out, a majority of people dying. Anybody that would need refrigerated medicine is gone.
Yeah.
Gone. All right. Well, listen, I just wanted to toss that dire...
Well, thank you for the upbeat call, Theron. No, you and I have talked about this over the years, and actually we share book titles back and forth with each other. And so I know you're a big supporter of this, and it was just one of my listeners when I brought it up, and Ed and I were talking about it, and it got me on this topic. So see, that's how these how we go down a rabbit hole pretty easy, don't we?
Well, any the thing that really rings true in my mind, and has, not just because of this piece I read, that a lot of people think, oh, I'm prepared, I'm a badass, I've got weapons, I know how to defend myself. Well, good luck when five guys show up, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning and you're asleep. And if anybody knows that you have 25-year life food, you're the first target. So
yep.
it really devolves into that very quickly.
Yep. Well, thanks for the call, Theron. Appreciate it.
Okay, Dick. Great show. Talk to you. Bye.
Yep. Bye. Oh, gosh. Here we're going to get drugged back into guns here. No, that's the name of the show, okay? Trigger Talk. We've got Bill from Howell on Carry Guns. Hi, Bill.
Dick, I've been carrying for some time a M&P Shield in 45.
Okay.
And I've got some arthritis is bothering my hands here. And I'd been looking, oh, maybe a year or so ago, I fired a, and it's from firing the gun and loading the magazines.
Right.
But I fired a, that same brand in the 380 and the 9mm Easy.
Yes.
That seemed a little bit better, but now I see they're promoting this 30 Super Carry. And I was wondering if you had any information on that, and mainly, you know, how it's shot. And secondly, I would be wary at this point of availability of ammunition.
Well, I want to say yes. It is, and you know what it reminds me of a bit? That everybody always wants the same ballistics as like a 357 Magnum, but without the recoil and without the muzzle blast and stuff like that. And there's actually a couple of good contenders in that. And so you're on the right track with the 30 carry. It's a it you know, there's another one in a rimmed cartridge that is thought of to be about the same, which is called the 32 Federal. Have you heard of that one? Bill, are you there?
Oh, I hadn't heard.
Yeah, it's called 32 Federal, and it is a, I want to say, if you like revolvers, okay, now you obviously carry a semi-automatic, and that's good. I accessorize. I decide what my mood is in that day, and I decide what gun to carry. But the thing is that the 32 Federal is one of these attempts to have as close to ballistically a 357 Magnum without the, because it's a lighter bullet and stuff like that, without the recoil and stuff like that. And it's available in several different revolvers, but it was never available in semi-automatic. So now they came out with the 30 Super Carry, and it is meant to be ballistically, you know, more than a 9mm, or at least equivalent to a 9mm, but with a lot less recoil and muzzle blast and things like that. It'll take probably 6 months for there to be many, shelves. By the way, the shelves are just starting to, you know, get more ammo on them. And by the way, it's very expensive, okay? So I would say you've already got the 45, and that's fine for now, but you could foray out into a 30 Super Carry and look to see who comes out with a gun that you'd like, okay? You don't have to do that right away because you've got one, although I understand the whole bit with the arthritis and everything. That's where the Shield Easy, the M&P Plus Easy. They've got them with different capacities and stuff like that. But both the 380 and the 9mm, both are like 50% easier to cock and easier to even load the magazines because of the design of the magazine.
Yeah, I like that little button on the side of the magazine. It makes it easier.
It does, much easier than trying to force it down and compress the spring, right? Although, the other thing you can do, do you have like an up Lula loader?
I've looked at them, and I've never seen anybody use one, so I'm not sure how that works.
They work outstanding. They're like $25 or $29 or something like that. And it's kind of a two motion where you squeeze it and push down, then you put in another round, and you let it up, and then you squeeze it and push down. I can highly recommend an up UPLULA loader. Buy one to fit your magazines. You'll be happy with it. Absolutely. If you don't like it, I'll buy it from you, okay? Okay, because it works outstanding, especially on some of these high-capacity magazines. I've got the, I recently picked up that Beretta Storm, and I already have a Beretta 96 in 40 cal, and I had forgotten how hard it is to load those magazines, okay? And the same thing, I got some 20 round magazines for it too. It is so hard to do, but you use an Ablula loader and it's a lot easier. So that might get you through until they get more of this 30 Super Carry out to the masses, okay?
Okay, yeah, you know, I've always liked that big chunk of lead coming out of that 45, but it, you know, it's a little, it's getting more difficult to handle.
I know. The thing is, the other thing is the 45, now you've got a good choice there, too, because even though it is a big chunk, it is a lower pressure round, and it's like 230 grains at 900 feet per second instead of like a 9mm that's 124 or 115 at 1,300 feet per second. The 9 and the 40 are much more snappy and they sting, okay? Whereas the 45 is more of a oomph, a push. You know what I mean? So it's yes, you got recoil, but it doesn't. It's not as bad on your hand as some of the smaller high pressure rounds.
Okay.
Yeah. So you know what? I'm anxious. I have not shot a super carry. You know what else it reminds me of? A 30 carbine. Do you remember 30 carbine? Okay. 30 carbine.
Yeah, I mean like an M1.
Yeah, like an M1 carbine. Okay. It's about ballistically like a M1 carbine. And if you ever shot an M1 carbine pistol, okay, like a Ruger Blackhawk or something like that, you'll realize that it was, well, it was a cannon. It made a, because they were, the rounds were mostly made for rifles, so they had a lot of muzzle blast on them. But they did have less recoil than some of the, like a 357 Magnum, even though it still was like 1,900 feet per second. So, yeah, pretty cool. So, at any rate, I'll keep you posted on that because it's one of these new things that was just introduced at SHOT Show this year, and it takes a little bit. Ruger's got it out. A couple other companies have made guns for them, but it'll take a while before you get enough ammo out, and especially also self-defense ammo. So
okay,
Bill, thanks for the call. Okay, let's see. And Theron led me into the Patriot series, which is the one of the ones that I want to say it's almost a combination of a fictional, hopefully fictional, but fictional story and a how-to manual all wound up in one. And it's right because he's talking about the guns and the magazines and the pieces in it, and I mean, and it's like, as a gun guy, I go, oh yeah, I love this. Eat it up, okay. But there are other ones that are not as much into the mechanics of the firearms, but they do talk about the firearms because they always want you to be thinking about, you know, it's like they'll come across somebody and the guy's got a lever action Marlin with a box of ammo, and that's all he's got, 30 rounds of 30-30. Okay, and I want to say very capable firearm and capable of good self-defense, but you need more than 30 rounds. Okay, a lot of people think like that when they talk about their guns. Yeah, I got a 357 Magnum with a couple boxes of ammo. Okay. That might be good for the first couple of days. What about the next month or the next year and stuff like that? A lot of stuff to think about, and not all of this is from an EMP weapon. Okay, some of the ones I've been reading recently. Also, matter of fact, that's the one, the name of the one I just started. I was going to say, let me find the list here. Or wait a minute. The first one that I hold on. Oh, this is really good radio because I am looking up something. It's called Darkness Begins. And I just started it at like talking about Jenny with our first one, 1 o'clock this morning, okay? Because I was looking at something and I looked up some of the EMP and apocalypse, post-apocalyptic survival type of things. And there's actually, I had this author on named Chris Pike. And she goes, Christopher Pike sounds like the first captain on the Enterprise back from the menagerie, the first pilot of the Star Trek. But Chris Pike is actually one of the names that, and that's not her real name, that's her pen name, but it's a woman, okay? And I've had her on the show a couple of times, and she is a member of a group of women that are like women of the apocalypse, okay? They are a whole bunch of women that write post-apocalyptic fiction. And they have interesting ones. And this one I just started last night. Now, this one was based on, just like there's another one, I'll have to find the series and let you know. But that had to do with a situation where it's the sun and a sunspots and mass coronal ejections, okay? It can be something of nature, okay? You can't, you know, I want to say the whole thing with climate change and stuff like that. Yes, yes, yes. That could be the sun. Maybe we're having a warmer sun for a period because it's in a period of high energy. Or maybe it could have a mass coronal ejection and that could interfere with all of our electronics and stuff like that. So sometimes it's things that aren't all, you know, like, gee, I can't imagine that we would have any conflicts with China or that, you know, Russia and Ukraine could have any conflicts or anything that could lead to an EMP weapon kind of thing that happens. But there are things in nature that can happen. Some things like, every once in a while you hear, oh, man, we dodged a bullet because, that big meteorite the size of Indiana just missed us. Holy cow, that would screw us up too. So some things, you know, are not man-made. Some things can happen in nature, okay? Let's see. What do you say we go back to Trigger Talk, okay? little bit of politics here. Biden did speak about guns this week, and he got everything pretty much wrong. He was talking about... He got out there again and was talking about assault weapon bans and stuff. And you can't have, you know, this doesn't infringe on your rights to Second Amendment. Do you know, there are no amendments that are absolute. Well, isn't that kind of what would that be like freedom of speech? Well, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. Well, you can, you just... It's especially if there's a fire, you can. But also, there are things that are illegal because you shouldn't do them. But it doesn't mean you can't do them. Well, when he talks about the Second Amendment and stuff, he goes, you know, there were restrictions on that because back when they wrote that, you couldn't buy a cannon. Well, actually, you could. You could buy a cannon back then. If you could afford a cannon, you could buy a cannon. And you know, it was talking about the fact that back then you could have a warship. You could, the Constitution provides for Congress to grant letters of marque that tells us you can do more than just own cannons. You could own your own warship. Now, keep in mind that a warship could pretty much destroy smaller coastal towns, yet you could have one if you wanted one, okay? And by the way, all the firearms that were allowed during the, or not infringed upon during the writing of the Second Amendment, were all frontline muskets, frontline cannons, frontline. So you could have, and often did have, the availability of much better firearms than the military actually had. Okay? So he just needs to keep his mouth shut. And actually, we'll get more into that in the second hour where we will actually talk about guns. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at WAM Talk 1600. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
And we're back with this morning's episode of Library Talk. No, it's not Library Talk, but I got to talk about one more. This is Dick Kupke, and it's Trigger Talk Radio, but there is another one that I want to talk about. William Fortune is the author that wrote the 1 Minute After series, and he also did one called 48 Hours, and it was about, I told they wrote about this one too. This is about the EMP that is the coronal mass ejection, and it what they call a Carrington event, which was named after a guy who was a scientist who discovered it in the late 1800s or something. But the point is that there are a ton of them out there. And William Fortune, I read that one. Gosh, when did that one come out? Back in 19, okay? I purchased it on January 18th, 2019. But 48 Hours, also by William R. Fortune, okay? So now, to get back to Trigger Talk Radio, obviously I sent the bat signal out, and we have Tom from Northfield Township talking about 30 carry. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Dick. I got some information on the 30 super carry. I'm getting it out of my March issue of Guns and Ammo that
okay.
I got.
Okay.
It's the March issue, so...
And it's barely February, so it's the new one. I don't think I've got that one yet, so, okay.
Well, it's got some good information on super carry.
What's it say?
Pardon?
What's it say?
Oh, well, I can give you a little ballistic information on it.
Okay.
And some other good information, and what bullets are available for it.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay, the ballistic information on the Federal HST 30 carry, it's a 100-grain bullet, and it fires at 1,250 feet per second, and it has 347 foot-pounds of energy.
Okay. Well, that's pretty stout, so that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, compared to the 9mm Luger, that has 364 foot-pounds of energy on the 124 grain, so there's not much difference. And on the 380, the 99 grain, you've got 223 foot-pounds. And the magazine basically, you know, puts the 30 super carry as a good performance gap between 380 and 9mm.
Okay, being closer even to the 9mm performance.
Yes,
so that's
good. It's very close to 9mm. Now, on the bullets that are available now, if you could find them, which you probably can't, Federal has, now these are defense bullets. These are hollow points.
Okay.
You know, they also have full metal jackets, but I'm going to give you the hollow points first.
Okay.
You've got the Federal HST, 100 grain, for the super carry. Then you've got the Speer Gold Dot, that's 115 grain, for the super carry. And you have Remington has a HTP hollow point, 100 grain, super carry, and that's listed at 1,230 feet per second. So they're all seem to be in that 1,200 foot per second range, you know, for speed,
right?
Which is nice. And the articles, let me flip a page here. They did penetration, you know, they did a ballistic gelatin test, and they got between 11 and 13 inches penetration on the bullets, you know,
okay,
on average. And let me see if I can get to the expansion. Okay, on the expansion, they compared the HST to a HST 9mm bullet. The 9mm bullet expanded 0.62 inches.
Okay.
But the 30 cal super carry expanded to 0.59. Now, that's pretty 5.9 to 6.2. There's you can't live on that.
Yeah, no, that's pretty close.
And I'm looking at the pictures of them here, and they almost look identical. I mean, it's very close.
Now let me ask this, because I'm just looking up on like AmmoBuy.com and AmmoSeek.com, and none of them have 30 carry yet, 30 super carry. Yeah.
Well, you know, these magazines can sometimes squeeze the bullets out of companies.
I know.
After a good weekend.
Yep. So I think that to Bill and Howe, I think that the guns are interesting if you can find one, and the ammo is hard to find, and like hen's teeth, right? You can't find them. So.
But here's another thing to be noted with the super carry. Now, on a 9mm that's got 10 rounds in its magazine, the same size magazine on super carry will hold 12, so that's two extra.
I think that is pretty neat. I think that just like everybody is getting into the max nines and stuff like that to carry more than you could with a 40 or 45, and they're just squeezing in as many as they can. And things like with the 380s where they're getting 12 to 13 of them in, the Hellcat where they got 14 of them, of the 9mm and stuff, everybody wants more ammo. Throttling it down to from a nine, which is 38 caliber, to a 30 caliber, that obviously gives you more room to carry more ammo, right?
Yeah, that would mean on my Sig Sauer 365, if that was in 30 carry, instead of having a 12 shot magazine, I would have a 14 shot magazine.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty neat.
Chamber 15 rounds.
Yep, I'm anxious to get a hold of one and. You know, whether, I don't know. I don't know that I need, well, I don't always need a new gun, you know.
Yeah.
But I think I might want one, so we'll have to see. So, and we'll come up with one. Maybe if somebody that listens comes up with one, then maybe we could do some ballistic tests with it, you know.
Yep.
Yep.
I wanted to call in today to be the first guy to give a ballistic report on the 30 Super Carry.
Well, very good. Thanks for calling in today.
Yep.
Okay, Tom. We'll see you later. Oh, gosh. There's always something new. You know, and it's like I was reading. Matter of fact, I'll get back to my, let me see how many pages of prep I have. I have 52 pages of prep, and I'm on page 6, okay? And we are well into the second hour of the show already. But let me jump down to something with guns in it. That would be different. This is a gun talk show, but we'll get back to politics. We'll finish up with politics. So I was looking at some guns, and they were talking about some of the new rifles and shotguns for 2021. And this is stuff that came out of 2022. This is stuff that came out of the SHOT Show. And, I have a whole lot of stuff here to talk about. So new shotguns coming. And actually, some of the ones, it was very interesting to listen to the different, the different ammo, like in pistols. Bill was talking about this 30 super carry, but you know, an alternative for somebody that has arthritis issues and both racking a slide issue and loading a mag issue and stuff, something like the new Ruger 57 with the 5.7 would be an outstanding choice. So all these things that are happening are interesting and could solve a multitude of issues. We've got Jim from Chelsea on bullet coating. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Dick. I called in last week. I just want to let you know the name of that coating so you don't have to spend a lot of time on the Internet.
Ah, okay. What is it?
It's Molly coating, M-O-L-L-E.
Okay.
I believe.
Or M-O-L-Y. Is it like molybdenum? Is that a short?
Actually, yes.
Okay. So that is a coating that is, that could be a whole show in itself. I may have to get into that because the Molly coating is is almost like something that you can even as a hand loader and stuff, you can Molly coat your any projectile. So pretty interesting. Thank you. Thank you for calling, Jim. And I will, let me write that down. Hold on. I forgot a pen today. Molly coating. And I'm going to talk about that on a future show then.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Thanks for listening again. Okay.
Yeah, make sure you look up microfracturing on the inside of the barrel from the use of that.
Okay.
All right.
I will look into that. Thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate it.
No problem, bud.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. Isn't it great? Look at how we can get different topics. It's like doing my show prep for me when you come up with these things. Let's see. So shotguns, American Tactical, that's a bullpup. Browning, Satori. So I want to say there's a big difference here. Now, a lot of these bullpup shotguns, and they're semi-automatic, but there's also bullpups that are pump shotguns and things like that. I'm a little leery about some of the new shotguns, and I shouldn't be, I suppose, because there's a bunch of them out there that, like Sega and other ones that have made for years, like an AK-47 style that has a detachable mag and stuff. Everybody's getting into the bullpups and you know what a bullpup is? A bullpup is where the chamber and the magazine are actually behind the pistol grip. So it changes the length. It puts the pistol grip and the trigger about midway on the gun instead of back towards the rear end of the gun, okay? And so the overall length of the gun can be shorter. You still have the required minimum on the barrel length, but because the chamber and the magazine are part of the essential buttstock, it allows you to have a shorter part out in front of the gun. So that's kind of neat. But I worry about them, especially when I see so many. There are ones that have, you know, triple magazine tubes that rotate, and these things sound unnecessarily complicated to me, okay? Maybe I'm old school. I like some of these, some of the good old-fashioned pump shotguns. I like the Remington 870s and the Mossberg 500s and some of the Savages, the Savage 37, the Ithaca 37, all these different ones that are out there. That Savage 320 I have that is a copy of an Ithaca 37 in a home defense shotgun is outstanding, okay? I suppose I should be more open-minded about some of these other fancy-schmancy shotguns, but what worries me is that, you know, the 870 and the Mossberg, they've been around for 50, 60 years, and there's a ton of not only proven parts, but replacement parts and things like that available. And you get something from American Tactical, which is imported from Turkey, and it's a semi-automatic 20-gauge tactical shotgun with a picket, you know, it's got Picatinny rails and a pistol grip and stuff and a bullpup design. But will that still be available 5 years from now or 10 years from now? What if I need a trigger spring for it 10 years from now? What am I going to do? Okay. Because Turkey is now part of the Soviet Union, and they're not and they're not importing trigger springs to the U.S. anymore. I mean, who knows, okay? So some of the older ones I have an affinity for. And by the way, they're cheap. Okay, this American Tactical Bulldog imported from Turkey has a manufacturer and MSRP price of $469, okay, which probably means it goes for $400. Okay, now flip that over to a new Browning Satori, the legendary Satori 725, an over-under, which would be a nice gun for shooting trap or hunting and stuff like that, $7,000. I don't think so. Okay. Now, I understand that it's just like, yes, you can drive a Yugo, but you would rather have a, what should I say instead of Yugo these days? Well, the Kias and the Hyundais and stuff like that are on the lower end, although they're actually pretty good cars these days. I don't know what to pick on when it comes to cars anymore, but I understand why do you need to have a Mustang GT or why do you need to have an Audi A8 or something like that? Well, because you want it, and if you can afford it, great. So when you've got a Browning Satori that has an MSRP of $7,000, maybe you want it, okay? Not in my house, I don't want it, but I might want it, but I will not see it. Okay, let's see. There's some new, the Mossbergs, the MS, or the 590S is pretty cool. Gosh, it's got a huge 12-defense self-defense shotgun that looks like it's got a tube underneath that holds like 12 rounds. Holy cow. And then actually, do you know what's interesting is there are a series like this Mossberg 590S series. It will chamber the shorter inch and a half or inch and three quarter rounds, the little short shot shells, and so instead of carrying 7 3-inch shells, you've got 15 inch and a half shells, and it cycles them. And actually, some of them even you can have a mixture. You can have a 1 and 7, 1 and 3 quarter, 1 and a half, and then a 2 and a half, and then a 3-inch shell. And it knows. How does it know how long it is? But it does. So at any rate, that actually goes back to one of my jokes, a favorite joke, that where they're asking this guy from the boondocks, and they go, what do you think the greatest invention in mankind ever was? And the guy said, I think that the thermos bottle is probably the greatest invention to mankind. And the guy goes, the thermos? Why would that be? And he goes, well, it can keep cold food cold, and it can keep hot food hot. And the guy goes, yeah, so what? And he goes, well, how do it know? How does it know whether to keep it hot or cold? That is a brilliant question right there. Oh, let's see. We've got Savage Arms. They did come out with their one called the Renegade, which also handles different length shells, but not down to the little inch and a halfers, but the 2 3/4 and the 3-inch and stuff, because they have a lot of different amount of powder and different pressures on them. And so for the shotgun to be able to function properly with different shells, well, that can be a problem. So what they actually have is this Renegade, and it's Renegade, which is actually capable of running different ones, and it senses which shell it has in there, and it functions appropriately. So that's pretty cool. And that's $14.99. Now, that one's in the realm of possibility. And they do come out with them in a self-defense mode called the Renegade Security. And a lot of things what these have on them are larger capacity magazines. They almost all have ghost ring sights on them now, which is kind of the thing in shotgun sights, okay? The ghost ring is like a bigger ring in the back, and then you just center the front one in the middle of the of the ring instead of trying to do it in a groove or a notch or in the little ridged pattern on the top of the receiver or something like that with a bead sight out front. So it's kind of neat. Let's see, new rifles coming. The Browning's got some new rifles that are the X-Bolt Mountain Pro, and these are in, I want to say, some of the higher caliber and magnum rounds, and they actually have huge muzzle, I want to say muzzle brakes on them. They look like a tank brake, okay? You know what I'm talking about, where it's open from the sides and it deflects the gas pressure back, and that it actually, the recall hog muzzle brake reduces felt recoil up to 77%. Now, I know that to be true on, not that particular one, but I have a HK91 clone called a PTR91, and it's in 308 or 7.62 NATO, and it did not have a muzzle brake on it at all, okay, or a compensator or anything like that. And so it was a bear, a semi-automatic delayed roller rocker. It was a thumper on your shoulder, okay? And I put on a primary weapon system muzzle brake, and it cuts it down by over 50%. It's amazing. So don't poo-poo these muzzle brakes that you see on some of these higher caliber or higher pressure rounds. They do make a big difference, okay? Let's see. Christensen Arms. There's so many rifles coming out. H&K actually came out, and they a lot of times they'll work with a company like Umerix, or some other companies that are, sometimes they even, Umerix is a pellet gun manufacturer as well in Germany. But H&K came out with a 22 caliber, 22 long rifle, replica of the M&P5, okay? And it's $479. I've actually got a similar product like that. I have a Uzi 22 that is also made by, gosh, Walter made that one, and it's in 22, and it is a hoot to shoot. If any of you remember, I think, gosh, my youngest, or at the time he was my youngest grandson, now he's my second youngest grandson, but he was like 8 years old, and I had him on the show, and I said, What's your favorite gun that you like to shoot? And he goes, oh, I think I like the Uzi best. And I think that heads were exploding all over Ann Arbor because an eight-year-old, that's irresponsible. But let's see. Nosler's come out with a new Model 21 bolt-action rifle. That is, I want to say it's available in all sorts of different things. 22 Nosler, 6.5 Creedmoor, 6.5 PRC, which is precision rifle cartridge, 26 Nosler, 27 Nosler, 28 Nosler, all of these different rounds. It's so funny because they are, as I mentioned this in the past, they're so close to one another. It really, you got to pick and choose, and you could have so many different, I mean, like a 308 Winchester, a 300 Win Mag, a 30 Nosler, they're all the same caliber, okay? Maybe they got a little more powder. And there's the 330 Winchester Ultra Mag and the Ruger Ultra Magnum and all these different kinds of things. They're all just a variation on a theme. So you really need to decide. I think you can't possibly have 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 bolt action rifles all in 30 caliber, because all with slightly, well, this one is good to 350 yards and this one's good to 375 yards. Well, you don't need to do that. You can pick one, okay? Remember Grandpa when he used to go hunting, deer hunting? What are you going to use? 30-06, the cheapest one in the store, the yellow box one, okay? Yeah, sometimes you just have to do that. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Wham Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And so I was just talking about all these different rifles out there. And one of the things that people are really enjoying, and it's fine to enjoy it as a sport, is the long-range shooting. Okay? I want to say, you know, it used to be that it was unheard of if people would be shooting at 400 yards or 500, 600 yards. Holy cow. Nowadays, they routinely shoot 1,000 yards and stuff, sometimes farther than that. But what you can't do with that is, and by the way, it's one thing to be shooting a steel target, a gong, okay, which is what you can reliably hit at some of those distances. It might be a, you know, a 24-inch steel gong or something like that. Because if you're shooting at those kind of ranges, every little bit of wind and temperature change and stuff like that can very much affect that trajectory. Think of that, 1,000 yards, and you're trying to hit something 24 inches across or 18 inches across. And just think the minute little bit of glitchiness in the trigger or something like that, how that could affect that. Well, that is fine if you're shooting at a inanimate object like a gong or a paper target or I think my friend was telling me, my friend John, he was out west shooting somewhere, and the guy had, like, at a quarter mile or more, they had like a 6-foot-tall purple dinosaur, steel dinosaur, and they were ringing the gong, you know, ringing the chimes of the dinosaur at that kind of distances. Well, that's okay. You shouldn't be hunting at that. Okay, how can you guarantee your shot placement on a deer or elk sized animal at 1,000 yards and have a humane kill? You shouldn't do that, okay? It's, and by the way, even though they have like these ELDX bullets and stuff like that, which, by the way, I've loaded up some for my 7mm Remington mag, but the thing is that I don't intend to use them at anything more than 200 yards, probably 150 yards, okay? And so I'm just trying to get, you know, ballistic accuracy and flat shooting trajectories and things like that. But you should not be hunting at these distances out there where you cannot humanely guarantee a one-shot, one-kill kind of action on hunting an animal, okay? Because if that animal is just wounded and you have to track it for a half mile or a mile or more, that it's all that suffering and stuff. No, we're hunters. We are conservationists. We are preservers of animal life. And by the way, when we hunt like that, we're actually culling the herds and it allows for better conservation and management of deer and elk and other things like that. They count on that. The natural resources folks count on us helping with preserving those numbers, okay? So at any rate, I just want to say, when you hear about all these new different rounds like that, the 30 nozzler, the 33 nozzler, the 28 nozzler, yeah, they might be a little bit better. They might be a little more accurate, and that's fine if you're using it on steel targets and metal gongs and things like that, but not for ultra-long distance hunting. You've got to have a conscience, okay? One of the things that I do see that is happening as a trend in some of the new rifles are things like left-handed version. Savage just came out with a left-handed version of their 100 or 110 ultralight. It's a 22-24-inch carbon fiber barrel wrapped in stainless steel. I mean, just really cool, okay? But it's available in again, all of these different calibers. So pick one that you like and get good at it. But they're left-handed now. And I think that, you know, for years you've seen, gosh, I remember watching, was it on Band of Brothers? Or was it on Saving Private Ryan, the guy that was the sniper? And I was watching him because he's left-handed. And he would fire, and then he would use his left hand to operate the bolt. I mean, it was really weird. Well, there are a lot of people that are left-handed. Now, I've never had a lot of experience with them except in a teaching element. I have taught people that are right-handed and left-eye dominant, left-eye dominant and left-handed, things like that. You have to accommodate all of those things, okay? But normally, and you know, even on pistols, they've got the slide release on the wrong side of the gun for the where the shooter's thumb is, okay? They've got the mag release on the wrong side of the gun. So they're coming up with more things like ambidextrous mag releases, ambidextrous slide releases and safeties. And in bolt-action rifles, completely left-handed. And sometimes, like Savage just came out with a new straight pull that you can actually modify it from left to right hand. You can have the same gun and you take the bolt out and you switch the handle, the bolt handle to the other side. I mean, what outstanding. It doesn't change. It still ejects to the right, but the lever's on the left-hand side. And so, pretty cool. I didn't think about that much before, myself and my family. Everybody was right-handed. Now, my two youngest grandchildren, my granddaughter and my youngest grandson, are both left-handed. So I've got to rethink the whole thing when it comes to what am I going to have them shoot? And I was just looking at, you know, like the Crickets and the little Marlin youth rifles and stuff. And fortunately, they're making them in left-handed guns now. So that's kind of cool. So I think that is, and I hear, you know, other hunters and stuff that are talking about that with that they like the left-handed guns to be available. I think that's outstanding. Let's see. Another SHOT Show thing here. It's a lower receiver for an AR-15, but it's called a Quattro 15. Okay, Quattro. Not, you know, and I'm thinking, wow, that's an interesting name, because it uses what's called, they call a quad mag, okay? And it is a big, fat 30-round30-round length mag, but it's fatter, and it holds 53 rounds. Huh, that is pretty interesting. Now, you obviously, there are ones that are out there that are like 50 rounds and 60 rounds and stuff. And what they do is they neck down. So they might be the width of two magazines next to each other, and then they feed together up at the top, and it necks into a normal AR-15. But this Quattro 15, they actually widened the whole well, and the result is that it's got a mag that feeds better, supposedly. So that's an interesting new development in the ARs out there. Let's see. Yeah, it really looks unusual because the mag well itself is very, very thick, fat, wide, okay? Let's see what else. Oh, 10/22 again. And they do make a left-handed Ruger 10/22. There's a new 10/22 that you can make that it's a conversion, and it takes a 10/22 and turns it into a 10/22 bullpup. Yes, it actually has the mag in the chamber back in the buttstock like we were talking before, but the swale for the pistol grip and the trigger guard and the trigger are all forward of the mag. It's pretty neat. And what is it? Let's see what it cost here. Gosh, wait a minute. I lost it. I can't find it now. Gosh darn it. But it's a couple hundred bucks, okay? Oh, $299 is the MSRP, so it's going to be probably $249, something like that. So it actually, it's called a Trek 22, and it's a conversion kit for your Ruger 1022. I think that would be a cool thing to have. I don't think it would work with the, no, it won't work with the takedown model. But it, if you've got an older 1022 and you're thinking, well, should I get a new stock for it or make do something? Think about this. A Trek TREK-22 conversion kit for your old 1022, and it will turn it into the neatest looking thing. That Picatinny rails and bipod mounts and all sorts of, and room for 2 10-round mags in the stock plus the 25-round regular Ruger. Oh, it's really cool. So let's see. Here's another interesting gun that came out at SHOT Show, and they call it a double, let's see, what do they call it? A double fold AR. And this is actually an AR that essentially folds in half, and the way it's designed and the design of the buffer, it actually, it's got a small, like a short barrel, and it folds exactly in half. It is really kind of a neat design. So it's called a double fold AR. Now again, more expensive than my taste will have, like $2,300. But that's not out of line for some of these high end ARs, and for you to be able to fold it into such a small package, that would be pretty interesting. It would easily be briefcaseable. So interesting. Okay, well, let me go back up now to a few more political things that were interesting. That's a new rifle too. The Henry Lever Action Magnum Express and 22 Magnum just came out, and it's kind of, I've got a 22 Magnum lever action. It's a Winchester, but it is a fun gun to shoot. Okay, this was an interesting story, and it said there's a couple of myths out there that have to do with self-defense people being in charge of their own self-defense and being a senior citizen, okay? And there's actually a couple of myths about that are interesting. And I want to say, just like when we talked last week about the new first-time gun owners and stuff, there's quite a few of them that are older individuals. And I say older, I'm talking myself, 65 and older, okay? But they may never have in the past felt they had a need to have a gun. But actually, people are, there are reports that more and more seniors are taking interest in armed self-defense. And so what happens is that you got to look at this, prove that whether you yourself are entering the world of retirement and grandkids or have relatives who are, the right to self-defend yourself against criminal acts does not expire when you cash in your 401k. And here are the two top myths about self-defense for an aging population, along with the facts. Myth number one, senior citizens rarely need to defend themselves against significant threats. Well, why would that be? One of the most famous regular columns featured in NRA publications, The Armed Citizen, these are reports of regular people who defend themselves against criminal attacks, and they get them from local news sources around the country. Because this is such a common occurrence, it is impossible to print all such reports. But the archives are certainly instructive. Okay. Actually, when you read it, there are a large percentage of the people that are attacked, whether it is physically, actually also electronically, by the way, so many people, because they were raised to be caring and helpful adults 60, 70 years ago, they're still that way. You hear about the people that, you know, they get a call and they go, Grandpa, Grandma, I'm in jail. I need some money. Send me some money. Well, they target people that they are likely to have grandchildren, and they know that you'll try to help, okay? So so you got to remember that it's not just being targeted from a physical standpoint. Seniors are particularly at risk because not only are they seen as weaker physically, but living on a fixed income often means that they are financially unable to move away from high crime areas. So, yeah, it makes sense that they would be armed, okay? Myth number two, firearms don't give senior citizens an advantage during a criminal attack. The myth here is that senior citizens are simply unable to use a firearm effectively due to physical problems related to aging. Although it's true that as we age, we can expect a certain decrease in our eyesight and reaction times, the extent to which it happens varies on an individual basis. As with any other skill, the more time you spend shooting, the less that skill will degrade. Jerry Mikulik, who we talked about a few weeks ago, he's the guy that shoots so fast with a revolver. Possibly the greatest shooter of all time is 63 years old. Ed McGivern is a world record shooter at age 59. And on a personal note, up until 5 years ago, before his passing at the age of 88, now this is written by the author of this article, he says his grandfather continued to regularly win state and local skeet championships, besting men and women a third of his age. And I remember that. I had a friend named Bill Cassidy. He lived up in Fenton, and I worked with him at Ford. And he was in his 70s, late 70s, and he was a member of a group called, I think it was the Black Hawk Indians or something, and they went around and they shot trap and skeet all over the country, and most of them were old guys. So, yeah, no, you don't lose it. You may have individual problems that you've got to adjust for. Actually, I'm going to the eye doctor this week on Monday because I need some new glasses, and I'm going to my doctor who actually can adjust your focal lengths on your glasses if you want to. He has you take your firearm and hold it out at the length that, you know, the focal length where you would normally shoot in a self-defense posture, and he adjusts your progressive lenses to be able to see not only the far distance at the target you're shooting at, but also the sights on your gun. Isn't that amazing? His name is Paul Uslan, USLAN, in Ann Arbor here. Outstanding eye doctor. I've gone to him for years. So let's see, 769-1222. I just happened to call that yesterday to make an appointment for Monday because I kind of messed up a pair of glasses when I was out sledding with my grandkids yesterday. And so I need to go get some new glasses. But I do highly recommend him because he does a great job on the eye issues. If you are an elderly shooter, okay. And actually, I got a story. I hope he doesn't mind me talking about it. One of my best friends, John from Danville. A gun guy and a car guy and a truck guy and just fun for so many years. He ended up having, and he's still a commercial truck driver. He was, and until he technically he had to take a little break here now because he just had an eye stroke on his right eye, and so what happened is that he can't see well at all out of that eye now, and now he can't drive a truck anymore because you have to have good vision to be a CDL, a commercial driver's license and stuff. But you know what when we were talking about, and that of course is a big concern to him because he's my age and he's planning on still driving for a while and stuff like that. But he goes, I'm going to have to learn to shoot all over again. And I said, well, not necessarily, John. You don't need to, you normally shoot right-handed and you use your right eye, which was dominant. you're going to need to learn to use your left eye. Okay. Now, a lot of people are right-handed and left-eye dominant and stuff like that. It's actually easier to handle when you're using a rifle scope, a telescopic scope, or a red dot or something like that, because you can tilt your head over a little bit. I'm doing it now. You can't see it on the radio, but you tilt your head over a little bit, and you use your left eye on the scope, okay? So you can still be right-handed and use your left eye. It can be difficult with pistols because if your eye is still has some sight. And what happens is I have had students that, and my daughter is one of these, that we actually put a patch over her right eye because we want her, she's left eye dominant, and she wants to be able to use a pistol and line it up correctly. So if you've lost some sight in your eye, then you've actually got a impromptu mask over that bad eye because you can't see out of it. So it'll be an easier transition than what you thought it was going to be. But the thing is that, yes, there are things that that as you age, you need to be aware of. With eyes, we had Bill from Howell talking about arthritis and stuff in his hands and things like that. But that doesn't mean that you are not fully capable of defending yourself. And I want to say, so that's what this article is about, is that the fact that you are a natural target when you're more elderly because the bad guys think you're an easy target. But if you read the Armed American and some of these magazine articles and stuff, you'll find out not most, but a large number of the people that are in them defending themselves, they always go, an elderly 66-year-old man, an elderly 72-year-old woman. Well, no, we don't consider ourselves elderly, and we certainly aren't going to be victims, okay? Oh, gosh, let's see. I was going to get to some politics. Do I need to get to politics? I only got a couple minutes left. A couple of things were worth mentioning. One is that which state is that? Hold on. In California, and be careful because these things are coming here. Always they start them out. They try them in California. A newly proposed California bill would require the parents of public and charter school students to disclose whether any guns are kept in their house and how they are stored. What? So if you are going to be having kids in public school in California, according to this state senator, Anthony Portantino, a Democrat, introduced the bill, and he said it prioritizes student safety by increasing available information on gun access and safe-at-home storage. The bill would require schools to search a student's property on campus for firearms if there are any credible threats, okay? Well, the point is that you are going to have to supposedly fill out a form and turn it into the school and go, well, yes, I have six long guns and six handguns, and they are in a safe in the basement, blah, blah, blah. I don't think so. If the federal government can't ask for those things in a list and a registry and stuff, the school board's not going to get it either, okay? Oh, man, just watch. That's the kind of stuff that they try to bring across the country. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at WAM Talk 1600. I'll see you next week.